Welcome back to the Laravel Podcast Season 4. Today we're talking to Mohammed Saeed, who is the employee number one of Laravel, queue master, and just a general great guy. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to the Laravel Podcast Season 4, where every single episode is about a single topic. And today, once again, I'm taking one of my friends who I know knows a lot of things and is willing to flex with me a little bit. We've got a little bit more than one topic in this one. Today, we're talking about queues and events. And actually, when we were talking beforehand, I was like, it's three topics. And he's like, no, it's not. It's two, Matt. So queues and jobs, queues and pushing jobs and queues, and then events on the other side. So I have joining me the man, the mystery, the first employee of Laravel, Mohammed Saeed. So Mohammed, welcome back to the show. I know you're one of our wonderful repeats. You and I are, I think we've known each other for years at this point, so I can call us maybe not old friends, but mid-time friends. Could you say hi to the people and then, as always, tell them what do you do and how do you tell people what you do when you meet them wherever you go these days, whether grocery stores or whatever else?
Hello, everyone. My name is Mohammed Saeed and I'm a web developer at Laravel. Well, if I meet someone at the grocery store and I would explain to him what I do for a living, I basically say I'm a programmer. This job is actually very popular here, so everyone knows what a programmer does. It's not hard to explain it. But if I meet someone else who is working in the software industry, and I try to tell him what I do exactly, like I work for a company that builds a framework that people use to build web applications, that's when things get a little bit interesting. So I have to explain. Yeah. I have to explain to them that I use PHP and that the framework is built on PHP and that it can do this and that. So that's when the conversation is interesting, actually.
I like it. Oh, where you live, what is the most common framework? If you meet another programmer, somebody else who's in the tech industry, what's the most common framework that people have heard of that you can compare it to?
Well, if he's a web developer, it's definitely Laravel. It's the most popular framework here and in the world, actually. Yes. Yeah.
Wow. So when I compare it to people, for some reason, Rails is always the one that people have heard of more than anything else. So I say it's like Rails, but I wondered if for you it was something different. So Laravel is actually, they know what Laravel is basically then.
Yeah, Laravel is the most popular framework here because PHP is the most popular language here in Egypt. Like most companies, they build their stuff on top of PHP or using PHP, and they build their stuff actually on top of Laravel.
That's incredible. That's not my experience. I mean, I know it's very popular if you look at the internet, but when I casually meet a programmer, they've probably heard of PHP, and it's probably, you know, there's somebody making fun of like old head people using PHP. But the easiest thing, if I meet somebody who's super enterprisey, I'll probably end up saying it's like .NET MVC or something like that, you know. And if it's if I meet somebody who's a little bit younger, I might say it's like Rails. Well, that's really interesting. Okay, so I've got a lot to ask you about and not a lot of time, so I will stop dillying around and just ask you. So we've got two, not three, primary topics in front of us right now. So I think the one that is the most complicated and that you happen to be the man, you know, around town about is queues. So let's start there. If you were to talk to somebody about queues and pushing jobs and queues who's 5 years old, which as a father you might have some general ideas about, how would you describe that general concept to them?
Well, actually, like if I want to describe it to a 5 year old or someone who is starting with software in general, he's a beginner. He doesn't understand what queues are, and he reads something like daemons and workers and stuff like that. It's always confusing. So I would start with saying that because that's actually my personal problem. When you have to go to the grocery store or the hypermarket, you spend time putting stuff in the shopping cart, and then you go stand in a queue until you reach the cashier, and then the cashier starts unloading the stuff from your shopping cart and calculating the amount that you have to pay, and then you pay, and then you put it back in the shopping cart, and that's basically 30 to 60 minutes wasted of your time. So what if instead of this, like you put stuff in your shopping cart and that's the actual thing that you care about? You went to the market to put stuff in the shopping cart for you to take home. And what if you just put the stuff in the shopping cart and then hand it over to one of the staff, and then you go home or you go to the playground or go eat ice cream. And then when you go home, you will find your things at the door and everything is done for you. So you don't have to wait for it. And that's basically what the queue component of Laravel does. It it helps you like offload some of the tasks that you are not interested in or that you don't want to worry about right now. You just offload it to someone else or some other process on the computer, some other program on the computer to take care of it while you continue doing your thing. Like for a grocery store customer, your thing or your the main job or the main part of what you're here for is to buy stuff. And if you spend like 30 minutes buying stuff and then another 30 minutes just standing in a queue, you might reconsider the next time you have to go to the grocery store and you say, nah, I'll just starve myself to death because I don't have to stand in line for 30 minutes. So I think that's how I'm going to explain it.
All right. The episode's over. It was perfect. We're done. That was so good, man. I love that. Oh, that's good. Okay. So before we walk over to events, we'll do those a little bit. Let's take that a little bit further and imagine now a practical circumstance in which a programmer would choose to reach for a queue. And can you tell me a little bit about what it would look like for them? Give me an example. You know, when's the last time or anyway, when's the first time you think somebody would tend to reach for one? And what kind of like high level programmery wise does it look like to set up and use the queue?
Well, first for a programmer to need to use queues, like I explain it in this way, like a user interacts with a program using a user interface, a graphical user interface, like buttons and forms and such. And a program speaks to another program using a programmable interface, an API. Like when you call a method, when you call a function, that's how a programmer speaks with a program. And what the queue is, imagine if you have several programs running in the background or running on your machine, and these programs speak with each other. And you need to find a way or you need to tell the programs how to speak to each other and how to interact or how to react on in different situations. Like if one of the programs took too much time doing a process or another program failed to finish a process and so on. And that's basically the kind of thing that you're going to need to use queues for.
Okay. So let's get a little bit more concrete now and say, if I'm a Laravel programmer, and I am building a Laravel app that allows users to have user profiles so that they can shop or something like that. You know, just think about like what are some common circumstances in which I would choose not to just do something synchronously, but instead push a job up onto the queue? Like what's one thing you could think of, you know, and that would lead me to choose to queue something?
Well, of course, the obvious answer and the example that people give every time they discuss the importance of using queues is that people won't have to wait until the action is done. So, for example, when people sign up, they don't have to wait until your application speaks with the mail service provider to send them the email verification email. They just can sign up and go to a welcome screen until everything is done in the background and they find the email in their inbox later. They can check it right now. They can check it next day. They don't have to wait until this is done. So that's one thing. Another thing actually, and taking the grocery store example, is if you, well, like when you put stuff in your shopping cart and one staff member has to take all the stuff from the shopping cart to put it on the table and count it at the counter. What if like you have several staff members and each of them offloading some of the stuff in the grocery on the shopping cart? So instead of you wasting 5 or 10 minutes for a single person to do the job, if 5 persons started working on that job at the same time, they will finish faster. And that's another thing that you can use queues for. You can program several instances of your applications to run in the background and the process or run a process at the same time, and they will finish it quickly. Another thing is if you do things synchronously, you have to handle everything like it's either all of it succeeded or all of it failed. If things succeeded, it's done. If things failed and the user wants to retry it, they will have to start the process all over. But when you offload things to the queue, you can have like if there is a temporary downtime on one of your servers or so, that only that server will be isolated in the failure. And then you can restart only the task that this server was trying to do, not the entire task that you sent to the queue. So that's basically the scenarios that you are going to need queues for.
Okay, perfect. So let's talk about one of those scenarios. The first one you said was the most common example people give. And I love that you're teaching us that there's times to reach for queues other than the most common, right? The user interface is going to be slow. And I love that. But let's, before we go any further into those, I want to make sure that people have the general architectural understanding of what's happening when I push something on the queue. This is in part because in the past, I used queues using something called IronMQ. And the actual architecture of how we're interacting with it was we were actually pushing pieces of code onto the queue that then the queue itself executed, which is not how we do things in Laravel, right? So if I were, for example, to want to send up an email, and instead of directly sending the email right now, I wanted that email to be queued to be sent later, what data am I actually sending up to that queue, and how is it storing it, and then how is it eventually getting done when it gets pulled off the queue?
Well, to have, or the queue system in Laravel is like two parts, part that runs on the server and the other parts that sends, or the request that sends the job to the queue. So on the server, you have several workers running. And a worker is basically a Laravel application that's like, they call it a daemon, but I don't know why they have this term for a long-running process or an ongoing process. It's a scary term, and I remember reading it the first time. It was very confusing what a daemon is. But a daemon is like a process that lives on your server and it never ends. Like, for example, an HTTP request starts a Laravel application instance, and then when the request is done, this instance is done, is terminated. But a daemon process is a Laravel application that doesn't terminate. It just staying there and wait, or just looping over and over, waiting for jobs to process. The other part is sending jobs to this daemon. When you dispatch an email job, for example, you send the email address and maybe the name of the user, maybe the time they registered. You send this data to the queue, and it's going to get stored in a persistent storage like a database or a Redis instance. And then the daemon, or the ongoing process on your server, or the Laravel worker, is constantly checking this storage. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, you're sending those drops to a Redis instance. So this worker is checking the Redis instance over and over, trying to find drops to process. So once it finds the drop of the email that you are trying to send, it's going to get this job and get the data stored in that job. The data would be the name of the job class in your application mm-hmm. that you want the worker to execute, and the data that should be passed to the job instance. So for example, if the job instance is called send confirmation email, and you have to pass the name of the customer and the email address, Laravel or the worker is going to create an instance of this class, the send confirmation email, and pass those data to it to create the instance. And once the instance is created, the worker is going to call the handle method inside that instance to execute your job. So that's basically how the queue works.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I love that. And that simplifies it so much for me, because I think, like I said, so I had worked with queues before where we had to write the code and push the code up. And so the queues were hard because I had to write these like standalone, because we were using CodeIgniter, and I had to write these standalone PHP things that I was pushing up that had nothing to do with the rest of my CodeIgniter, that had just enough code to function. And then I didn't really know how they were working or what environment they're in. And when I started with Laravel's queues, I said, oh, no, it's just basically pushing, like, it's pushing just enough data for Laravel to know how to operate on it. And then Laravel itself, a full instance of my exact same Laravel application running in the daemon, news up basically that job based on that. And you described that perfectly. There's a long running Laravel instance somewhere that says, oh, there's a new thing here. Cool. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to use it to new this thing up, and I'm going to act on it. So it's really just kind of the same as our normal Laravel application, right? The only thing that's happening there is that it's a convention that Laravel has that if you are going to push something up and then it's going to be pulled down by the daemon with that data, here's the structure of class we want for it. You know, it's a job or something else that has should queue on it. But in general, it's really just data being put into a database. It happens to be Redis or whatever. And that data in the database is instructions for the Laravel app that's running long-term on the daemon to create something and act on it, right?
Yes, basically that's how we describe it. It's like instead of calling or instead of creating an instance of the send confirmation job class and calling the handle method synchronously, you just send this the name of the class and the properties to pass to it. You mm-hmm. store it in the database on Redis, and then the worker is going to create the instance and call the method for you.
Yeah, I love it. Also, when you said that, I went and looked it up on Wikipedia because I couldn't remember why it's called a daemon. So a note to anybody, it can be pronounced either daemon or daemon. Apparently, they actually mean the same thing. I was like, oh, it's not a daemon, it's a daemon. That's the same thing. But it's because apparently there's a thought experiment called Maxwell's daemon back in 1867 about the second law of thermodynamics. But the thing that is relevant is that in the thought experiment, the daemon spends a whole bunch of time basically in the background, constantly acting on something. And so the people who originally created the concept of the daemon at MIT were like, oh, this, you know, this thought experiment that is a mythical being constantly working in the background is very similar to what daemons do. So yeah, it turns out that's why. Thank you for leading me down that path, Mohammed. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more practically about how I would create my own. So you mentioned an email, and I know that a lot of things in Laravel are really easy to queue themselves. Could you talk a little bit about the should queue and anything else that would be helpful for us to know if we were to choose to create our own things and choose to make them queue in Laravel?
Well, like the basic form of a queue job is just a class that has a method called handle. And inside that handle method, you run any logic that you want the queue or you want the worker to execute. But there are other things in Laravel that can be queued. Like, for example, a mailable, like a mail object. You create a mail object and you have the option to send that mail right away from your code, like with using the mail facade. So mail send, and then you pass the mailable object. And this is going to execute the mail right away. It's going to send it synchronously. Or you can say that I'd like to queue that mailable. So you add the interface should queue to that mailable class. Mm-hmm. And Laravel will understand that you want to queue that mail. Every time you want to send it, it's going to be sent to the queue. It's not going to be sent synchronously. Same goes to notifications. Whenever you send a notification, Laravel will check if you have the should queue interface implemented on the notification class. And if so, it's going to send it to the queue. Same to event listeners. If you have an event listener that has the should queue interface, Laravel is going to execute the code in that listener in the queue. It will not execute it synchronously. So these are the things that you can queue. Another thing that can be queued, and actually it's queued by default, is broadcasted events. Like when you're doing WebSockets and you're just sending an event to the WebSocket server, Laravel will queue it by default. You don't have to implement anything or you do anything. It's going to be queued by default because, like, if you're sending something to the WebSocket server, Laravel is smart enough to understand that you don't want to do the sending synchronously. It's going to be done in the background.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. So the only thing we didn't talk about there, you mentioned the fact that if you wanted to create your own thing, that you want to make your own job that you want to push on, then it has a handle method. If I were to create something of my own, there's been a couple different names for the thing that you push in the job manually, a job that you push manually in yourself, commands and jobs and all that kind of stuff. So if today I wanted to create a fresh PHP class or object that is solely intended to be used to push on something in the queue, what does that look like? What's the name of that?
Well, it's a bit like the job or a job instance or a job class is like a basic PHP class. There is nothing special about it. You send that instance to the bus component in the Laravel framework, and the bus component is going to convert it to, or it's going to serialize it to a string form.
Yep,
so that like string form... Yeah, that string form can be stored in Redis or can be stored on a database or sent to a queue driver. And sometimes, or like before the bus component was introduced in Laravel, when you had to send a job to the queue, you had to use like the queue facade and then you call the push method and you send or you dispatch or you put a class name and you have to do the serialization of this class for Laravel to understand how to unserialize it when the worker receives the job in the end. But you don't have to do this anymore. And for a long time, Laravel is doing this automatically behind the scenes, so people won't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So it kind of, it's really helpful for you to say that. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of like push to this a lot, is because it has felt in the past that you need really smart classes to be queued, right? Like you have to make sure it's, you know, you create it the right way. And you, what you keep pushing at is like, really all it needs is this handle method. And, you know, it needs this this interface. And it, when you have those things, Laravel's taking all the rest of the responsibility off of your plate. And basically you just dispatch that and that's it. I love that. All right. So I know we also have the entire eventing system to talk about, but before we go there, what do you think the most common thing is that gets people stuck when they're first getting started working with queues?
Well, I think the most confusing part in the queue system is the number of configurations around jobs and workers mm-hmm. and connection and so on. So I think, in my opinion, it's the most or the biggest component that has the largest number of configurations. And this gives the developer a lot of flexibility to tell the workers or tell the queue what to do exactly. But with great flexibility comes some confusion because you have to configure a lot of things.
Yeah.
Of course, Laravel makes decision on behalf of people for the most common use cases, but you mm-hmm. have to learn all the configuration keys in order for you to use the or to have the actual or the real power of the queue system. You have to understand all these configurations, and that's the most confusing part. But besides that, one of the most important concepts, like we said, that the a worker is an ongoing or a daemon, or how do you pronounce it?
I say a daemon. It's apparently daemon. They're both right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have a daemon running on the server, and it's a single instance of a Laravel application that's running and it's processing all your jobs. So for example, if you send a job that sends an email and another job that creates a record in the database, they are both totally two different job instances, two different classes, but they are going to be executed by the same instance of the Laravel application, mm-hmm. unlike mm-hmm. an HTTP request. Each HTTP request will start a separate instance of the Laravel framework. So yeah. having a single instance processing all jobs, one of the things that confuses people is that is state management when doing mm-hmm. so. So for example, if you have a singleton defined in your Laravel application, a singleton is a class that the container creates once and uses it during the lifetime of the application. And since the application will mm-hmm. not get terminated, that instance is going to be used for every job. So, for example, if your job relies on the fact that each HTTP request will start the application from the start and you will have a fresh instance of this singleton, when you send this job to the queue, it's not going to be a fresh instance. It's going to be the same instance that was created when the worker started running maybe 30 days ago. That's something that is a cause of so many bugs and so many problems and so many confusion, especially when people, like, for example, have static classes and static properties, and they mm-hmm. store values in these static properties, and they expect on the next job the values will be empty. But that won't be the case because it's the same application, the same memory, the same everything.
Wow. I mean, now that you say it, it makes sense, but I've never been bitten by that. So that's really helpful that you said that. So if we're using singletons, we can't expect those singletons to refresh at the beginning of every job because each job is not new. And it's sort of like working with something else like Ruby or something like that, where you don't, you know, we can do some lazy programming things in PHP because we knew everything's going to refresh on every single request. And when we're working with queues, we don't have that luxury. That's really helpful.
One of the things that Laravel is good at, besides the perfect documentation and all the things that we know, is that it makes a lot of decisions on behalf of the user so they mm-hmm. don't shoot themselves in the leg.
So
something like this, like most of the cleaning that happens around jobs is done mm-hmm. in the background so people or so the problem of having to deal with the same state for a long time is not felt by as much people as it would have been without Laravel doing this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it does a lot of cleaning in the background. It does a lot of, it makes a lot of decisions on behalf of you. So you don't get into this situation a lot. But again, if you move to a more advanced kind of jobs, like jobs that do a lot of things, you will realize that you are using the same memory allocated. It's the mm-hmm. same process. So if you store things in the memory and you don't clean after it, it's going to stay in the memory, and then you will have crashes, and then you will have problems, and so on. So that's exactly one thing that people need to be aware of when dealing with queues. Another thing, it's actually a little bit trivial, but we ourselves were developing Vapor. We had this problem. We had a job that was dispatched from inside a database transaction, and the job was dispatched before the transaction commits. So it was relying on a model, an eloquent model that was created inside the transaction, but the transaction didn't commit yet. So the model wasn't in the database yet. And the job was dispatched, and because the worker process is a separate process, it picked the job before the transaction commits. So when it started processing that job and looked at the database or the record wasn't in the database, and it errored. And that's another problem that I've seen it on the forums, on the Laracast forums several times. And we actually faced this issue while debugging something on Vapor, like not a couple of months ago. But like in the a few weeks ago, we released another version of Laravel that has automatic configuration that you can use to say, hey, every time I dispatch a job from inside the database transaction, don't dispatch the job until the transaction commits.
Oh, cool.
So it's done automatically for you right now. You don't have to worry about it. You just have to tell the queue system, or you have to tell the command bus to not dispatch any jobs while there are open database transaction. And if that transaction was rolled back, discard the job. Do not send it. Because it doesn't make sense to send it anymore, because
now that the transaction's not happening.
Then transaction really is not happening. So that's,
I like that.
Yeah, so that's another,
yet another way you're keeping us from shooting ourselves in the foot, right?
Yes.
I love it. So you had mentioned a little bit ago that there's all these different configuration options. I know that there's two places at least where you're thinking about configuration options, and one of them has to do with the configuration in your system, but one of them has to do with the configurations you pass into the daemon when you're spinning it up. And I realize we haven't actually talked about what the process of spinning up a daemon looks like. Obviously, you could go to great detail teaching us how to do it on our own, but I would say if somebody's just listening for the first time and just learning about queues right now, the answer for how do I spin it up is use Forge. We're not even going to go any further. So if I were to recommend everybody, we're using Forge to do it. Can you talk a little bit about what the setup is and what configuration options Forge makes available to us, and what, you know, whether we should be thinking about those or should we just stick with the defaults when we're creating a new daemon?
Well, when you're creating a worker, let's say you are using Laravel Forge to host your application, you're starting a worker on Laravel Forge. Forge has this nice interface that it shows all the configurations that a worker accepts, like the timeout of the worker, or how many processes you need to start, how many workers, like for example, how much time should the worker wait before pulling jobs from the queue each time, and so on. It's like several configurations that you can see on the single screen, and it has like hints on what each configuration does. So you can, so you can easily decide what you want to do. But actually the defaults on the when creating a worker are basically the ones needed by, let's say, 90% of the use cases. Except for one thing, maybe is the number of retries. By default, a worker is configured to fail the job if an exception was thrown. So in our example, if you're sending an email in the queue and sending that email failed due to, for example, a temporary outage at the email sending service, that job is going to fail, and it's going to be stored in the failed jobs table for you to decide what to do with it later. But like that, for 90% of the cases, that's not what you want. You want the worker to retry the job for you automatically, because it's one of the things that you use a queue for, like the queue system for. So there are automatic retries when things fail. So when starting a worker, you probably will want to configure the worker to retry the job several times before it considers it as a failure. Another thing you need to mind for is the amount of time for each job is allowed to run. So you don't want your workers, for example, to keep running a job for hours get stuck in for hours on a job that's going to fail due to like a network that's not responding or a problem on the server and so on. So you might want to think about this when you start a worker, like how much time should the worker allow a single job to run before it terminates it right away. So these are the two things that most common that people will need to configure each time they start a worker: the timeout for each job and the number of attempts a job may have before it's considered failure.
Yeah, those are really great points, especially because sometimes we're queuing things where we want there to be a longer timeout because we're queuing it because it takes a long time. Let's say you're queuing something that you're dealing with this like really finicky external API and every API call takes a minute and a half. We got to make sure your timeout's longer than a minute and a half. But you also, like you said, you don't want it to just sit in timeout mode forever. That's really helpful. Because we haven't even touched events at all, I want to make sure that I give you the chance to say everything you want to say about queues, because I know that queues, I think to me, queues are more important. I'm going to be honest that while I want us to talk about events, I very, very seldom use events. And I actually just wrote an event yesterday on a client project. So it's not that I never use them, but I use queues daily and I don't use events daily. So I do want to make sure you really have the time to talk about it. What other things do you think it would be helpful for us to cover about queues before we roll over to events?
Well, basically, I would like just to mention that I agree with you that events are not like part of my favorite or it's not the favorite thing that I use when building applications. The problem with events is that you don't see what happens after you send the event. It's hard to figure out what happens. You have to check all the listeners that that listen to this event and check their code one by one until you figure out what happens when this event occurs. To me, I'd like to see, or it's better for me to see the complete execution plan of the code that runs synchronously at least. And the parts that are going to be run in the background or via queue worker, I have them, like I have a job, I dispatch a job from the synchronous part. And I know that if I want to see what happens after dispatching this job or what happened inside the job, I'll go to the job class and check it out to find what's going on. But with using events, you have to like see all the listeners and check all the listeners. And I don't enjoy this way of building applications. I love to see everything in front of my eyes to see what happens when this piece of code is executed.
Yeah. And I think of queues and events as being similar because both of them involve not necessarily asynchronicity, but both of them involve the fact that like you say something should happen and the thing happening is disconnected a little bit. Right. And we'll talk about events in a second. But like just to your point there, with events, what's disconnected is that you triggered the event, but the processing of the event is not defined there. With queued things, you triggered the job putting on the queue and the execution definition is defined in the same spot, but it's not actually synchronously being acting at the same time. So functionally, they both are separate a little bit. But like you just mentioned, when you're queuing something, whether or not it's executing right now, the code is right next to where you just triggered it, which is helpful for us as programmers. Whereas with events, that's not the case. So you know what? Even though I said, why don't we finish queues? I think let's just get to events real quick. And then I think we'll wrap up the whole concept. So can you give me, you know, I think we'll keep events short. Can you give me the five-year-old concept of what the eventing system is like in Laravel?
Well, like there is this event that my son woke up. This is an event. And there are several listeners listening to this event. So when my son wakes up, you have to prepare food for him. You have to change his diapers. You have to do a lot of stuff. You run crazily all over the place. So this is an event. My son woke up and a lot of listeners get executed when this event runs. And some people use this pattern to build their entire application. So for example, when a user gets registered, you do several things. You send a welcome email, you send a confirmation email, you set up an account for them. You do several things when a single user registers. And some people like do all this stuff in the controller or in a repository. Other people choose to use events. So they fire the event that a user was registered, and then they create several listeners to this event. A listener that creates an account, another listener that sends a welcome email, and so on. So that's basically what events do. I know it's not for a five-year-old, but that's it.
Well, your son waking up was for a five-year-old, so you're good. And you dropped right into what you know is my second question always, which is what's a little bit more technical version of it? So if I were to build an event, so that the event that I just built God, what was it called that I built yesterday? Because I was going to use that as an example. It was something about Stripe. Let's say it's a Stripe webhook. So every single time Stripe sends a webhook back to me, usually I'm not actually expecting it, right? Because Stripe webhooks don't come at a time where a user's interacting with your app. There's just Stripe decided to send you, with your app, the Stripe said, hey, you know what? This user logged in and updated their payment information and now it's no longer failing, right? And so when they send a webhook back to me, I've got a webhook controller and that translates that webhook into a, you know, user updated credit card event. What does it look like for me to create that event and create those listeners? You mentioned a little bit about it, but so I'm going to create a class that defines the event, right? And I'm going to create another class somewhere that defines a listener. And can you tell me a little bit about the methods they have and everything like that?
Yeah, you have to create a class with the event, or you can actually have a string event, like a string form. Like when you just, you can just, dispatch an event that's a string, and then you register listeners to this string event. And a listener is basically another class or a closure. Like you can register a closure to be a listener to a specific event. And you can actually register a closure, or you register another a listener class to listen to all events on your application. So a listener can listen to multiple events and it will get executed. The way things work, or the way Laravel works, is that when you dispatch an event, Laravel is going to check the event dispatcher to see all the listeners registered to this event, or if there are any listeners that are supposed to listen to all events on your system. And it's going to collect these listeners and it's going to execute them one by one. And that's basically how it works.
Okay. So yeah, so each of those, when they're executed, they are passed this particular event. So if the event is just a string, thing happened, well then cool, they'll respond to it. If your event actually is a class, it might have some data attached to it. For example, in my example, there might be the user ID or anything else that came back through. And so that event listener will be passed the event and if optionally any data that's attached to it, and then they'll act on it. So in my circumstance, one thing I could do, let's say, you know, there's 20 different webhooks that I might actually be getting back from Stripe. You know, I could handle all those in a controller. I could create a custom class for handling them, or I can dispatch a Stripe webhook received event that has all the data we got back. And then there can be listeners for individual different types or whatever it is. So there's ways for you to basically build these architectures such that you're listening to these events and it's not happening directly in the controller. So one of the benefits of that is, you know, you, let's say you've got all these different things happening. It's not all just, oh, we need to add one more thing happening every time the user registers. We're going to add a new synchronous action directly in the user registration controller. But you also mentioned the downsides, which is especially for new folks in the code base, it's really hard to understand what's actually happening and when and why, which especially for those of us who are used to just kind of walking through it and seeing the thing happen and then looking at it, it feels much more disconnected and it feels a lot harder to debug these things. You mentioned that you tend to not prefer them. Are there any circumstances in which you find yourself still saying, well, this is the one circumstance in which I do use events, or you just kind of don't use them at all?
Well, I try to avoid them because it's easier to track down what's going on inside the code that runs synchronously when it's all in one place. But
yeah,
I imagine if there are like things that are common or things that should happen when several other things happen. Like for example, a listener that listens to when a customer is created or updated or deleted, or a listener that listens to a subscription that's created or updated or deleted. For this kind, it's better to write it in one place and then dispatch or run this code in several places or on these several occasions. But since it's one piece of code that has to run on several occasions, it doesn't make sense to put it all in one place. So at this in this situation, it might be a good idea.
That makes more sense. Yeah,
to put it in a listener and register the listener to this event. So you know that when this or this or this events are fired, your code or your listener will get executed. But like some people out there, they build the entire application event based. So like they always dispatch events and they do everything in listeners. And I find this very hard to follow what the application does. Like if I have to work on a code base that's like 4 or 5 years old, that it's all built in events, and I sit and try to understand how things work, it's going to be very, very difficult. That's why I'm actually not a very big fan of using the event system. I mean, inside the application, like I understand the importance if you are having microservices, so several applications listening to events and they get executed. Like, for example, you may have a PHP application and a Rails application or a Python application. And you fire an event in the PHP application, the Python application listens to this event and executes it. That's like a legit way of using events. But if it's the same application, the same code base, you don't have to dispatch events and listen to all these events and several listeners. And it's going to be hard to follow what's going on inside that single application. You understand what I am saying?
Yeah. I love that you just said microservices because that's where my brain was going. I was thinking using events sparingly, sometimes it makes sense. You gave a really great example. But using events extensively seems like it's trying to solve the same thing that microservices are trying to solve, which is different teams, different groupings, different pieces of your architecture communicating to each other in what feels like a more architecturally pure way. But majority of the time ends up like it's not a bad tool, but preemptive use of it or using it when it's not necessary makes things unnecessarily complex without actually getting the value you're getting. So I can imagine if someone had a really, really massive team and one part of the team was responsible for just one thing and another was responsible for just another thing, that events might be a really reasonable way to work on it. Team one would say, you're basically treating them like hooks in something like WordPress, right? We're going to be building our thing, our user registration flow, and you're not allowed to touch it. But we'll send out events for certain things that you all are able to send, you know, make your own listeners to. So if you've got two entirely disparate teams, one of which is responsible for this, one of them is responsible for that, events could be a really helpful way for those two teams to kind of collaborate communication. But if you don't have two teams, forcing everything through an event system just makes it unnecessarily complex and distant. So I think that's a really great note there.
Yeah. And with the example that there are several teams, there is a difference between like when using several teams, you can actually dispatch jobs that other parts or other teams that executed in other teams code. Like, for example, as you said, when the user is registered, you send the, for example, create account job. And that job is written by another team that handles the account creation. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But the difference in this situation, the difference between dispatching jobs and dispatching events is that a job is like an event, but it can only have one listener. An event, on the other hand, can have several listeners. So if you send the job of user registered, only one team can execute the job and create the account. But if the situation that you have several other teams, each want to do something different, and you dispatch a user created or user registered event, several teams can listen to this event and each team its job. So that's the main difference between the two concepts.
That's a great differentiation. And I think it's good note that there's a lot of circumstances in which some of us might naturally want to write an event and a job is just fine there. And so you're helping us kind of draw the line of like, when do you actually need the event? Like I'm building something right now. I now remembered where a user can come back from Stripe Connect and not actually have finished their Stripe Connect onboarding flow. And so Stripe Connect puts the responsibility on us as the application authors to not just take that user's information back, but also treat it as in an incomplete state. And there's multiple different times which we need to be checking back with Stripe, including listening to Webhook, to figure out whether it's complete or not. And so in that, I have basically six different times in the application where I basically go to Stripe and say, hey, is it done yet? Hey, is it done yet? Hey, is it done yet? And so I could, in multiple different circumstances, say something happened that might merit us checking whether or not they're done yet. And that could be an event that has a listener. But the thing is, that thing happening only ever has one action to take. So in that circumstance, in that same line of code, dispatch new event, you know, user may have done something that completed their thing at Stripe Connect. I also can just say dispatch new and then the job, dispatch the job that is check if user has finished the application status. And like you said, because there's only one listener there, writing it as a job, like you mentioned, I wrote the code in one place, which is that job. I can dispatch it in multiple places, but because there's only one listener, the job, I now can keep my code much clearer and more direct because you never have to ask, oh, how many listeners are there to an event? No, you don't know. There's one. There's one job. The job is running, end of story. That's a great delineation. If you don't need more than one thing responding to it, there's a good chance you don't need an event.
Yeah, basically. I love it. Yeah, and there is also like this. There is a confusion between jobs and events, and there is another confusion between jobs or the queues and the schedule component mm-hmm. inside Laravel. So people sometimes ask, should I use the queue for this or should I use a schedule job? The difference between them is a little bit confusing. And the difference is the schedule job, you put like a specific schedule that mm-hmm. Laravel is going to check every minute and see if any of the jobs in the schedule need to run right now, and they run it. And they do it mm-hmm. over and over. Like, for example, mm-hmm. you say like at the beginning of the day, send users a good morning email. Like nobody, right. I know nobody does that, but that's the example I have for you now.
It's a fun example. I like it.
Yeah. So in the morning, you check each morning that your Laravel application is going to see that you have this scheduled at 9 a.m. to send to your customers a good morning email. But if you mm-hmm. have to do it using a job, you can't tell the worker to do something repeatedly. You just mm-hmm. dispatch a job to the worker and you tell them, say good morning. And it was yeah. going to say good morning and that's it. It's not going to do anything again until you tell it to say good morning another time. But mm-hmm. in the schedule, yeah. as a scheduled job, it's going to repeat the instructions that you give it each time the time for this instruction comes to run. So that's mainly the difference between the two.
I do like that you brought that up, though, because one of the most common times I do find myself creating custom queued jobs is something that's running on a cron that is massive. So like every Sunday at 3 o'clock in the morning for every single user in the entire application, do X, Y, Z. Well, what happens when we have 50,000 users? Now, granted, there's some other solutions, but one of the first solutions you can reach for is every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. now go dispatch 50,000 jobs. So you don't have to worry about that one thing that's happening, you know, once every Sunday timing out. You just loaded up your queue for the day and your queue workers got a fun Sunday ahead of them without you having to worry about it kind of timing out. And what happens when you have 500,000? Well, give it a couple more queue workers, right? And so queues and scheduled tasks can often have a really good relationship. But like you said, it's important to know the distinction between the two. Okay, so we are getting close to the end of our time. I asked for you a couple things where people get stuck when they're working with queues. Are there any tips or like high level things where you say, if there's one or two things that you could say, if only everybody in the Laravel world understood this about queues, I think life would be better. Is there anything else you have on your list like that?
Well, I think there is another area of confusion that trips everyone is the concept of retrying jobs and job duplication. So for example, if you send a job to the queue and that job is a long running job, like you say, it's a job that sends emails to several thousands of people, it's going to keep mm-hmm. running for a long time. But there is a configuration in the worker that says by default, if I don't listen back, if our worker doesn't listen back from a job after 90 seconds from it starting, consider that this job failed and then dispatch mm-hmm. another instance of the job. Mm-hmm. So this 90 seconds is the default value. If you have jobs mm-hmm. that are going to run for over 90 seconds, you have to mm-hmm. change this configuration inside mm-hmm. your queue.php configuration file, or your job might get dispatched or might get run several times. And yep. this can lead to problems. Like for example, if you are, my example is saying good morning. Saying good morning once is nice, but saying good morning several times.
Yeah, 17 times, yes. Not so nice.
Yeah, so that's a very common issue with people using queues when running jobs that run for a long time is that they forget to update the retry after value in their queue configuration. So the job gets dispatched several times while it's still running on another worker.
Yeah, and that's very helpful because there's more than one configuration option that has to do with how long something can run. So often you think to change one of them, but not the other. And I've done that a lot, or I've helped clients get out of that a lot where they say, wait a minute, I changed this one and yet somehow we're still getting this duplication. And it was exactly that. So that's a really great point. Are there any other things you want to tip us off about, common pitfalls or super tips before we start closing up?
Yeah, well, before, like after every deployment, if you have workers running, you have to restart those mm-hmm. workers because as we said, those workers are long-running Laravel instances. And if you deploy application, you make a change, these long running jobs will not get updated. You have to terminate.
Right.
You have to terminate these processes and start new ones. So the fresh instance of your application starts with the changes you made in the deployment. That's also another common issue.
Yeah, because if you don't do that, your application that's long running won't get the new code, right? It never got spun up with whatever your updated code is.
Yes, so the HTTP part of your application will have the new changes while the worker part is still running the old instance of your application with the old form or the old version. So we have to restart the workers for them to use the new version.
Am I right in remembering that you also need to restart it after making any modifications to your environment variables?
Yes, because like it's a single instance. Any changes...
Reads the file once.
Yes, any changes that you made, they won't, that, like this instance will not know about them until you restart the instance, you start the process. Yeah. So the a new environment is started, a new part of the memory on the server starts with new stuff, and that's it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so I've got some ideas here, including one that your name is attached to. But if someone were to want to learn a little bit more about queues or events, where would you recommend they go look?
Well, the Laravel documentation, it's like one of the things that everyone loves Laravel for is the great documentation. So everything can be found in the documentation. Like a lot of what I say today is already mentioned in the documentation. And it's mm-hmm. like if people read the documentation top to bottom, every time they try to use a component of Laravel, they will avoid mm-hmm. a lot of bugs and a lot of problems because everything... Yeah. is in the documentation. And if yeah. it's not in the documentation, or if you find yourself trying to find another way of saying the same thing, because like we all learn in different ways, we all mm-hmm. understand things in different type of saying. If you find yourself want to learn about it in a different way than the documentation, so I wrote a book, and this book covers everything about the queues. It's an ebook in a PDF format. You can get this book, and it has everything I know about queues. And if you don't want to read an entire book about queues, I also have a website called divinglaravel.com. And mm-hmm. it's supposed to be covering everything about Laravel, but for the past couple of years, it's all about queues. Because that's because that's my favorite component in Laravel. It's one thing that I spend... Like if I'm not working on Weber and I'm not working on Spark, I'm putting all the focus on the queues, trying to enhance the queue system, trying to find ways to make it better, make it faster, make it easier, and so on. So that's my passion, the queues part.
I love it. So we will have links to your website and your book and all this kind of stuff, all available in the show notes. And of course, if people want to hear more from you, where are you creating content? You mentioned Diving Laravel. Where else are you?
Well, I'm on Twitter. And I'm also on YouTube. My handle on Twitter and YouTube are very simple. It's called Demsaid. Demsaid. And it's basically a shortcut for the Muhammad Said. I did it when I was young, and I thought it was cool to have my name as the Muhammad Said, the only. But like it sounds ridiculous now, but I'm stuck with it. I can't change it. So
well, it works. It's easy to remember. It's easy to type. It's easy to read. So it's doing the job. I love it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to make sure we covered. I think that was it. So on to our personal moment. Last time we talked, we got to talk a lot about Regatta and biking and diving and stuff like this. But I don't think you were a father at that point. So I wanted to ask for you as... You, first of all, I know you as a person. You are a kind and caring individual, and I know that you're a great dad. But also, even on your social media, you've been really open a lot about various aspects of being a father. A lot of people who become parents for the first time either get a lot of bad advice or don't get any advice at all. So since you are fresh in here, I'm just going to ask you for the number one piece of advice that you wish that you had been given before having your first kid. Because I mean, literally just in the last week, I feel like I've seen a half dozen people in the Laravel community mentioning they're about to have their first kid. So I'm sorry if this feels more generic, but I'm really curious, what is the one piece of advice that you wish you had been given before you had your first child?
Well, I think the first piece of advice that I wish someone gave me is that not every child is the same. It's not...
Come on, that's the truth.
Yeah, it's not how you see it in the movies, because in the movies, all kids are the same. They are like, there is a typical form in the movies about kids. And if you go outside and you meet people for 1 hour or 2 hours, people with kids, you also see like a small part of what being a parent is like. So you have to be prepared for the unknown. And another thing, most of the advice are bad advice. So it's better to not listen.
It's so true.
Yeah, it's not.
It's so true.
Yeah, it's better to not listen to advice and actually listen to your kid. Yeah, they have the answers. They just can't tell you the answers. You have to find it in them. So that's like, it was very frustrating at the beginning that we tried to apply any of the advices that we get, it doesn't work. But after a year and more, when we started listening to him, and when he actually started to, like, he doesn't speak yet, but he gives you cues about what he needs. When you listen and when you spend effort on listening on what they want and what they need, things get a lot easier. So don't listen to advice, just listen to your kid. That's the advice I can give.
I love that. And it should be noted that I'm very wary of ever asking somebody to publicly give advice about kids because of that exact same point. And I asked you because I didn't know whether you'd say this, but I know that you know that concept, right? Like, just because something worked with my kid does not mean it's going to work with your kid. And so that means so many people who give advice are just giving advice about what worked for them, assuming that it's going to be the same for everybody. It's not. So, oh my God, that's so good. Most advice is bad. Learn to listen to your kid. You heard it here. VM Saeed told us this. I love it. All right. Is there anything else that we missed covering today? Any other way that people can support you or any other aspects of cues? Anything else you want to cover before we cut out for today?
Well, I think we're good. But just again, I would like to mention it again that people should really read the Laravel documentation, because it has everything. Unlike any other piece of software that's out there, the Laravel documentation has everything. If you read the Laravel documentation, you're going to build great applications and you will sleep easier at night knowing how each component works if you read the documentation. So read the documentation.
I love it. Mohammed, you are amazing. Thank you so much for working with me. For the rest of y'all who didn't know, I made him sit and wait in an empty Zoom room for 20 minutes before this, and he still showed up with a smile on his face, gracious and kind as always. So, Mohammed, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, the work you do for all of us, and just you as a friend. You're a great guy and really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me, and I always enjoy talking to you, Matt.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you all, and we'll see you all next time.